To side one, continuing with our interview with Ruth Frank.
Anyway, this one particular gentleman had the most fantastic collection of Iranian things. And the last visit we had with him, he was telling us about this fantastic home he was building. And I said to him, after he told us how big it was and how many rooms, I said, what does it cost to build a house like that in Tehran today? I said, I'm just curious as to compare it to what it would cost in Pittsburgh. And he said, $250,000. And I said, gee, that's a lot. That, he built that house as a ruse to fool the politics there. He was getting out with all his treasures. But to make them feel that he was going to stay there, he put this money, which was probably a pittance to what he had in the way of old treasures, into building that house. And in the meantime, he was getting all of this fantastic early stuff out. Went to London, has a store right near Claridge's. He has passed away, but his son is there with treasures from Iran, like you would believe.
Oh.
So the Jewish people in Iran all saw what was coming. And the first Jimin I knew about it was when they refused to wait on us, you know, to be cordial to us. But he got all that stuff out just by building a house. And a lot of other friends, one of the gentlemen in the rug business did the same thing, got all his rugs to New York. I haven't been in touch with him for years, but that was what happened in Iran. And in the beginning, when our first years there, 1971, when Jim went on business, I wasn't in business. They couldn't have been nicer. They couldn't have been more caring about Americans than what so they're spending money there and helping their economy.
It was a sad change.
Oh boy. Still. What's happened to those countries? I mean, my world has become so small. Mm-hmm. I used to go to Afghanistan, Iran, Sri Lanka. I mean, I can name that, you know, dozen countries mm-hmm. that I wouldn't go near now.
What travel plans do you have now?
Right at the moment,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to California at the end of this month to meet my son from Belgium and my son from Seattle. We're having a big family reunion.
Yeah.
That's my immediate travel plans. We're getting together.
That's lovely.
Jimmy and I actually have a 55th reunion.
Oh, how lovely.
That's lovely.
So that's nice.
Mm-hmm. It is indeed. Well, I want to tell you that it's been more than a pleasure.
Oh, it was fun talking to you. I mean, I love this spiel. All this old stuff. No, it is. It's interesting. And I keep thinking, you're going to keep doing this much longer, Ruthie? And then I sit on the floor, I stand up there and I start making a few pieces with some of this really old sort of, I call it historic stuff, and I'll go on.
Well, the thing is about it, you can do what you feel like doing.
Well, you don't feel like you're 75, do you?
No.
Okay.
I look at my daughter, and I'm younger than she is.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's it's how you feel.
Yes.
But when you were younger and your parents were 75, what did you think?
They were old.
Do you think they were old? I remember Mother's and Dad's 25th anniversary. And being sent up to bed at around 9:30 with this party going on, and my sister and I sitting on the steps up above looking down at them, saying, gosh, those people are so old. Now, if it was their 25th anniversary, they were as old as my daughter.
Yes.
And that's not old. But that was the way we used to think about things. And then I stopped thinking that way when I saw my mother prancing around with 100, you know?
Mm-hmm. That was a blessing.
Yeah. And the last thing she ever said to me, and if I tear up, and I'm going to try not to, I grabbed her hand the day before she died. You know, she was in bed, and I just took her hand. I said, gee, I love you, Mom. And she looked up at me, and she said, I love you, too, and I don't want to leave any one of you. She meant it. She just, she mm-hmm. didn't want to.
And she hasn't.
No, she hasn't. You're right. That's a nice thought.
And on that note,
yeah, let's quit.
End of the interview.
Yeah.